You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Rose Jr., and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is William Palmer, my amazing co-host. And in today's episode, our guest will be talking about how to run rental properties for profit and peace of mind.
That's right, Charles. And she also talks about how she became a real estate investment coach and being a mindful landlord. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
Hi, everyone. It's Charles Rose Jr. with Breakthrough Investor, where we help you break through that next level as an investor. And with me today is William Palmer, real estate investor, coach, and the amazing co-host of Breakthrough Investor. William, what's up, man? How you doing today?
I'm doing great, Charles. Just happy to be here and really looking forward to today's episode.
Oh, man. I am too, man. Our guest is just phenomenal, has been in the real estate world for a while, and just has some amazing stories to share of her journey and how she got started, man.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know about you, Charles, but having a coach or a mentor, someone that you can go to with a potential problem and help you streamline the direction you're going in your real estate journey is absolutely irreplaceable, in my opinion. And this next guest absolutely does that. And just really, really looking forward to hearing just kind of her stories and her journey of how she got to the point where she's coaching other people and just kind of maybe some of the breakthrough moments that she had to push through personally to get where she's at now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Coaching is so important. You know, we were coached by Dustin and we coach other students, and our guest today is a phenomenal coach and helps so many people. And so I'm excited about her, man. And William, she's also the author of The Mindful Landlord, right? And this is a book that teaches you how to run rental properties for profit and peace of mind. I love how she has for profit and peace of mind, because, you know, what is profit without peace, right? Yep. And so I love it. I love it how she talks about all two things. She's also very passionate about helping others. In fact, she created a podcast called Real Estate Investors Club Podcast. So, William, I'm so excited about our guest today. So let's welcome to the show, Terry Schauer. Terry, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Heck of an introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
Oh, we have faith in you.
100%. We have faith in you, Terry. And Terry, you know, we haven't got to meet yet. We hope to definitely meet you in person. Like, William and I are old school. We love meeting in person too. Mm-hmm. But thank God for the internet. You know, we can still meet and still talk. And so we are super excited to hearing more about you and story, about you and your story. And I'm sure our listeners are too. So tell us more about your investing journey and what initially made you want to do it.
So, I mean, I always like to joke and say that I never had a real job. It's actually kind of true. I went to school, I went away to university. I'm in Canada, so what you would call college. When I was 19, I moved to Toronto. I'm from Montreal. And when I moved there, I ended up, there wasn't any space in student housing. So I ended up moving into this like co-op house that was just like a total mess. So garbage everywhere. It was like 15 rooms in the house. So I ended up renting a room and the place was just like not managed. So I moved out of my parents' house, and the very next day my housemates voted me house manager. I don't know how that happened. And so then like at 19, I was just basically like managing this crazy student house with no real stick to enforce any policies, right? So all I had to do was like, all I had to use was like public shaming to try to get my housemates to, you know, take out the trash, replace the toilet paper, clean up the kitchen, like do all the stuff that would make the house run smoothly. And then that actually, like, I kind of like found a place that I was comfortable. And then I moved to Vancouver to continue my studies. And I actually like went to see my dad and I'm like, look, I like doing this. Co-sign a lease with me. I'm going to rent a big house, portion out the rooms, and I'm going to house hack, like before house hacking was cool. So I ran a house like that in Vancouver for a little bit and was able to like live rent free, which as a grad student, you know, when you're not kind of on a tight budget is kind of a good thing. And then after that, I moved back to Montreal, which is my hometown, and went to see dad again and said like, look, I've been now basically managing, you know, houses for 5-6 years. Do you want to lend me a down payment and let's go buy a rental property here? And then, you know, in Montreal, we are quite a dense city, like think something that resembles New York a little bit. So like, we don't really do single family homes here. You have to buy the smallest unit thing you would buy as a rental property would be a duplex. So like duplexes and triplexes are really like common places where investors start here. So I went into business with my dad when I was 26, bought the first triplex, turned it into like student housing that I rented out by the room to foreign students in a really crappy part of town. So without like, it wasn't super intentional, right? Like it was, I just kind of like failed forward into this situation where like that was, you know, one of the worst neighborhoods in Montreal. Finding tenants was difficult. Back then we had high vacancy rates. And so portioning out the rooms and renting them to foreign students allowed me to get a better class of tenants and also to like jack my rents. And then that worked so well that I saw I was onto something with the business model and I'm like, okay, well, like, let's do another one. So a year later, I went to see dad again. I'm like, okay, like now I just need you to co-sign the mortgage because we had enough equity built with the rents. So I didn't need another down payment. I'm like, let's just refinance and do another one. Okay, we did that. Then after two houses, dad was like, okay, like, you know, now we're out of borrowing capacity and I wanted to keep going. So I started cold calling other property owners in the area and proposing my business model, which was to rent, furnish, rent by the room, jack the rent, and in that way get a better quality of tenants also than what you could get in the area. And so then I kind of built my management business in that way, like a student rental kind of thing. And all the while I was going through grad school. So this was kind of like a side hustle, right? Like I had two investment properties, I was building a small management thing, but I was also finishing my PhD. And then when I got to the end of that, then I had this kind of crossroads, right? Like there was a fork in the road, which was like, okay, like Terry, are you going to become an academic now? Or is this real estate thing going to become like a full-time gig? In which case I need to get better at it, right? So I looked at that and, you know, for a variety of reasons, felt that academia wasn't the right place for me. And then I got the only real job I ever had at a property management company, actually in France. And worked there for 3 years to kind of learn their business model. And then I came back to Montreal and decided, okay, now I'm going to do this full time. And then I kind of went full time into real estate and then, you know, started building my management business around what I learned in France and then continuing investing. So that was kind of long winded, but that's how I got started.
Wait a minute. You went to France to learn how to manage properties in Canada?
Well, no, it's a bit more complicated than that. I had a previous incarnation as a combat athlete, and I actually got an opportunity to kickbox semi-professionally in France. So I needed a day job.
So you had a connection.
Yeah, I needed a day job. And I also wanted to learn property management. So my goal was, okay, let me go and like live out my kickboxing aspirations and then at the same time learn property management. So yeah, that was my day job.
I definitely want to say, you know, what a great skill to have, kickboxing when you're a property manager, right? So if anybody messes you, like
Harry,
I would hire you. Like if I had to make a choice at a property manager with kickboxing skills who's great versus one who's great with no kickboxing skill, I would choose Terry.
Just saying.
That is so awesome. So Terry, along this journey, with your journey sounds fantastic. But I'm sure that there were some challenges along the way. Can you share some of the biggest mindset challenges you had to go through so that you can become a breakthrough investor? And our definition of breakthrough is, you know, going through that mindset shifts, going through these changes to get you to that next level?
Oh, it's a great question because, you know, I think it's so symptomatic of what goes on in our industry, right? Like you ask someone, how'd you get started? Like, what's your story? They're going to tell you like the highlight reel, right? And then if you poke and like you want to pull back the curtain a little bit, okay, like what was behind the highlight reel? And like, I love that question. I think it's so important because it really helps people who are starting out, you know, picture like, well, if she could get over those kind of things, like I can get over them too. So first of all, thank you for the question. I have two places where that I want to tell you about. So the first one was before I was managing properties, but I hadn't bought my first investment property yet. And when I was 25, I had like a really bad anxiety phase. So I started having panic attacks, and like it got to the point where like I couldn't leave the house. Like I had extreme, I guess it was like social anxiety, but like to the point where like I was not functional. And, you know, I went to the doctor, they offered me meds, and I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to try to solve this mentally. So I kind of started reading and noticed that like one of the ways it's prescribed to deal with anxiety, if you want to handle it in a non-drug related way, is to develop a mindfulness practice. And so I started meditating. I started to understand how the human mind operates, how our consciousness functions. And then that was so powerful. That methodology was so powerful that I just really like dove right into it. And I mean, like I could give you guys a reading list of, you know, 5 sources that could help someone if they want to learn about that kind of stuff, but it's really not mindset. So I want to just take a minute to make the differentiation. So mindset is this thing that you do with your thinking mind. So affirmations, you know, a lot of those kind of things that are at the level of thinking. But if you want to practice mindfulness, which is not the same thing, it's to understand your operations of consciousness. So I have my thinking mind that's always blabbing like the radio. I have my emotions that come through like weather systems. So like, you know, I can jog in the rain, I can jog when I'm depressed, but like there's this weather system that's kind of coloring things. And then underneath that, you have this thing that in mindfulness gets called the watcher, or like presence. It's this, when people say be in the now, what they mean is identify with presence as opposed to identifying with your emotions or identifying with your thinking mind. So like, in a nutshell, that's kind of the methodology of mindfulness. And then there's various techniques like meditation that allow you to become better at switching between the levels of consciousness. But so like, I would say like from 25 to 26, I like went hard into that because I had no choice, I felt like, right? Like I had, you know, my mental health was in a bad situation. And so learning that methodology was a way to pull myself out of it. But it just went so much further than that, because once you are really able to like at will move yourself between those levels of consciousness, like the power of a well-functioning mind is incredible. And so that is really what allowed me to, you know, it opened all the doors in my life that got opened, right? Like it allowed me to have that opportunity to go kickbox in France, because before that, like I would never have dared to do it. I would never have made the phone calls. I would never have dared to put myself on a plane to somewhere where I don't know anyone on another continent, you know, to do that. I would never have dared to like close on this hundreds of thousands of dollar rental property. Like, yeah, my dad co-signed, but like he didn't, like the mortgage was on me after that. So, you know, like there was a high stress situations, and I would never have been able to do that had I not acquired the knowledge of how our mind functions, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that was like my first kind of breakthrough moment. And then the next one, like if we fast forward, I guess, I don't know, 5-6 years, when I had started, you know, doing real estate professionally, I was working in France, but like I used to be a big time introvert, and I had a little bit of, you know, social anxiety. I was super shy. And so like getting over that, because real estate's a people business. And if you want to build a business, you can't, even if you're an introvert, you can't be afraid of dealing with people. And so then, you know, understanding maybe another methodology of like how to network, and the fact that like those little socially awkward, nervous moments, like don't actually mean you have to not socialize. It just means you're going to feel a bit nervous at first. So like mapping that whole thing. And then that was kind of the next inflection moment that allowed me to like go, you know, full time into business and full time as an investor. So
thank you for sharing that. That's awesome. And I think, you know, a lot of people can benefit from, you know, some of the things you shared about mindful investing, right? That takes it on just the next level. And but you do so many different things, and you've been so successful. And so how important do you think it is to develop an action plan?
An action plan in terms of what you do in your real estate thing, or an action plan of like your life, or all of the above?
I would say all of the above. Yeah, because they all tie into each other. So I would say all of the above.
All of the above. It's a good question. You know, I guess I don't spend that much time thinking about that. You know, like for me, a lot of it is I'm super evangelical about the mindfulness aspect, because I feel like, again, like in martial arts, the mindfulness stuff is available as a discourse. And a lot of people who like go far in that field, because it's so stressful and you compete in martial arts and it's very physical, you know, you're going to get punched in the face. Like, if to succeed in that environment, you kind of need some sort of mental thing to make you very strong. And I feel like in real estate, those ideas are just not as available as they could be. And they're super helpful because so many people are walking around with just like poor mental hygiene. You know, if all you can do is listen to your thoughts chattering all day long and you don't know how to like switch out of that, it's going to be very difficult for you to like succeed at a high level because you're constantly self-sabotaging at the wrong level of consciousness. So, you know, as far as an action plan goes, goal setting. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think maybe the action plan is more of a, like a goal setting kind of a question. Right. And I think if you're talking about mindfully setting goals, you know, having outcome goals is good because it helps orient you. But ultimately the thing that's going to produce those outcome goals are your habit goals. And so like a habit goal would be, for example, like my goal might be, I want to lose 10 pounds. Okay. I want to lose 10 pounds by, you know, February 1st. Okay. So now
Terry, I'm just going to like, just to insert, my goal is to lose 10 pounds. I don't know. William, did you, I don't think I told you that. Cause I've been in the Dominican Republic and I've been eating too much food, Terry. My wife family's from here. So we've been here since, but anyway, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want you to structure this goal for me so I could use it.
not selfishly at all. That's great. Okay. Well, I'm very happy. All right. Let's say your goal is to lose 10 pounds by a specific date. Okay. Because we all know when we set goals, it has to be, you know, measurable and there has to be a date involved. So, okay, fine. Good for you. You made this goal February 1st, 10 pounds lighter, whatever it is. But the thing that's going to make that happen for you are the habit goals. And so that means that in your life, your everyday life, you have to integrate habits that are going to make that outcome the consequence of the stuff that you do every day. And so my habit goal would be to try to eat, you know, 100 calories or 200 calories less every day. And then how am I going to do that? I'm going to get a dieting app that counts my macros on my phone, and I'm going to just really stick to that. And it's by building those habit goals that the outcomes are a natural consequence of behaviors that you incrementally input in your life. And so, you know, as far as action plans, like I do think that those outcome goals are important because they help to orient us in the same way like a compass would. But I prefer to answer by saying focus on habit goals, because you might miss February 1st by 15 days. But if you built the habit goals, you're going to get there, right? Like it's the habit goals that are going to bring you to your outcomes. And then it's just a question, like, is it going to take 2 weeks more, 2 weeks less, 1 year more, 1 year less? In a sense, it doesn't matter, because you will get there eventually if you have habits that support your outcome goals.
Love it. Love it. So I need to download an app so I can start creating it. I actually have, you know, MyFitnessPal on my phone. I just need to actually use it.
Carbon. Okay, use Carbon. It's way better.
Carbon? Yeah. Okay, I got to write that down. Carbon. Okay.
You can like scan the barcodes of stuff and then like, it, you know, it does a better macro counting. Anyway.
Okay. Carbon. I will definitely, yeah, I'm making a note. Yeah. So just let you know that William and I are a little bit selfish, you know, with these episodes, like everything we're learning from
you. I'm sorry. I thought I put this on.
No worries.
You guys, I hope you guys have editing. So, I thought I put this on a do not disturb, but the reason that like didn't work the way I
wanted. Oh, no, we're actually live.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we're live.
Yeah, yeah. No, you screwed it up at the beginning when you told me you did 8 in a row. You haven't been live for 8 hours, so.
You caught us. Oh, goodness. That's awesome. So I'm going to definitely, okay, Carbon app, use that, okay, for sure.
So Terry, tell us a little bit about your property management coaching. I think that's a really interesting aspect because, I mean, as an investor, I'm wanting really good coaches, right? Or not coaches, excuse me. We all want that. But we all want really good property managers. So what does your coaching system look like? And just kind of roughly how long has it been around? How many people have gone through the course? How's that worked out so far?
Mm-hmm. So just to like the Real Estate Investors Club podcast is actually in partnership with the Real Estate Investors Club up in Montreal. So we're actually the like premier Anglophone coaching entity in Montreal. So just for those of your listeners who aren't aware, like Montreal's in the French part of Canada. And so like there's a smaller Anglophone community here. And so like I'm basically like a, you know, a partner of the Real Estate Investors Club here. My podcast is in partnership with them. Property management is one of the things that I teach as part of that structure. But we have like basically like a full, you know, 10-week investing course that people take when they want to either level up what they're doing or just learn how to invest from the beginning. And then I have one day that I do on property management because, you know, I guess that's really been my secret sauce in my business model of how, you know, how I've made money in real estate has really been through leveraging the property management side. Like I'm not a creative finance person. I'm not a construction person, but I'm just like very good at optimizing buildings through property management. You know, the Real Estate Investors Club, like we started the Anglophone side, I guess, just before COVID. And then COVID was like a little bit weird because like we had a very in-person coaching model. We tried to run it online for a while and that didn't work super well. And then we switched back to like kind of a hybrid model after. So I would say it's been what, like 5-6 years that the English side of that club has existed. And I don't know, we've had maybe 200-300 students graduate from it so far. And we're planning on like now in 2024, we have like a big growth plan to, you know, have more of an online offering because there's also just this kind of moment in coaching now where I think we're trying to figure out how much, where's the sweet spot between some in-person and some online stuff, because too much online, people buy a package and they, you know, don't even watch all the videos or aren't necessarily good with the accountability side of it. We're actually launching a mastermind to kind of help with that, like a weekly mastermind call in January. So, yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. That sounds good.
That's phenomenal. And I'm super excited to hear more about your book. Your book is called The Mindful Landlord. And so tell us more about the book. Who's this book? Who did you write this book for? Tell us about that process.
So, you know, I think I alluded a bit earlier on in the interview to the, you know, the impact that like a mindfulness practice had on my life. And I really can't overstate like how I feel like, man, that methodology should be taught in schools. Like, how is it that we have this incredible tool, which is our minds, and we just don't know how to use it because we don't get taught how consciousness operates. And because of, you know, the impact that that had on my life, and then walking around in the real estate industry and seeing that we have like these expensive coaching programs and nobody addresses like what's in between your two ears, you know, and that's just so powerful that you really can't get the same results from anything you're trying to do if you're not using your mind to its full effect. So, you know, I got super excited about those ideas and thought like, people know about this in martial arts. People know about it in, you know, kind of more spiritual circles, but in real estate, it's not there. And property management is like one of the places where people tend to really make mistakes because tenants are frustrating and managing buildings is time consuming. And, you know, a lot of people end up getting out of the business because they can't handle the property management side of it. So I really wanted to kind of bring those two things together. And then the book is like sort of alternating chapters between one hands-on technical managing and acquiring properties. And then every second chapter is a mindfulness, talks about mindfulness. And so, you know, I can give you one example. When people are starting out, one of the big things that they have to deal with is fear. And in order to break through your fear, you need to understand what it is. And, you know, fear has a mental component, as in it's a property of your emotions and your thinking mind. So you have these spiraling thoughts, the fear light on the dashboard comes on. And then you as the presence has to decide, how am I going to respond to that stimulus, right? Like my fear system is running. Am I going to identify with it? Or am I going to, you know, say, let's disregard that warning light because I know it's actually just because I'm tackling something I don't know how to do, right? And then there's also understanding the physiology behind fear, which is that we have this adrenaline system that kicks us into fight or flight. And if you want to be able to sit through some of those negative feelings or negative thoughts that come along with fear, if you understand that your body's just like running this physiological fear system, you can learn how to, you know, either diminish your arousal or push yourself up if you're kind of too sleepy. But, you know, it ends up with risk taking, it ends up being more that we have to talk ourselves off the ledge and calm ourselves down. So that you do by understanding fear, like tactically. And then how do I hack myself so that I don't have to be, controlled by my fear, I can choose, is this a good warning signal to listen to, or am I going to disregard it because I have a stretch goal that I have to pursue, right? So that's like, there's, let's say, one chapter on fear and how to outwit that in order to take on stretch goals that you might not have been able to take on otherwise.
And that's so important, like overcoming that fear. That's something that stops so many people from taking action. I can't tell you over and over. And, you know, so William and I, we both have students, we've went through fears ourselves, but, you know, a lot of our students, you know, sometimes they're afraid to pull the trigger on buying the property. And, you know, it's like, I wonder, like, what creates that fear in us, especially like even when we have all the facts in front of us and, you know, the numbers work, you know, it's a good deal, or, you know, you should be doing something, like why? I wonder why, like, fear has this power of like stopping people from doing what we desire to do. What are your thoughts on that? And how can one overcome that?
Well, so, like, you know, us in the West, we have like a kind of a weird relationship to our emotions. I think we kind of take them at the one hand, we take them too seriously. And at the other hand, we don't take them seriously enough. So, you know, what are emotions? Mm-hmm. They're basically like warning lights on the dashboard, right? Like, if you lose something, you're sad. If you're facing an unknown, potentially threatening situation, you're going to feel fear. Like, that's just us reacting from back when we were on the savannah and you heard a rustling in the grass and your mind says, oh, maybe that's a lion. You know, let me run up the next tree because that might be an existential threat facing me. And so, like, a fear reaction, it's a very kind of normal human thing. We all experience it, and it's there designed to keep us safe. So if you want to pull that into the real estate field, like, why do we have fear reactions? Well, because there are existential threats looming in the real estate field. Like, if you close on the wrong deal or you make risky decisions, like, those could existentially, financially wipe you off the map. And that has serious consequences for your family, for where you stand, you know, in the social hierarchy, the kind of things that you're going to have access to, that your kids are going to have access to. So, like, that's like the neighboring soldiers are coming in to burn your village, right? Like, in today's world, like, that is how that maps on. And so those are like existential threats to your family's lifestyle potentially. So, like, it's normal to have a fear reaction when faced with those kind of decisions. So, like, on the one hand, I think we need to be like a bit more gentle with ourselves. Like, it's, don't beat yourself up for being scared. Like, it's normal. But now the question is, what are you going to make of those danger signals? Because if you've run the numbers twice and you've analyzed and you've figured that, like, there's nothing really ultimately threatening about this, you're still going to feel the fear, but you need to move forward anyway. So it's that, like, analysis situation, and to understand that, like, the fear is there to protect you. But if you realize that, like, maybe I don't need to respect this the way I used to, maybe I don't need to identify with it the way I used to, it's not because I feel fear that I have to do anything. Like, if you're about to bungee jump, you're going to be scared as hell. Does that mean there's an actual real risk of dying? No, right? Like, maybe a small one, but, like, statistically, no, but statistically, or getting on a plane, right? Like, some people are afraid of planes, or there's turbulence in the plane. Like, I'm a nervous flyer. So, like, I'll get an adrenaline dump, but, like, does that mean I shouldn't get on the plane? Like, no, that's just my system, like, reacting to something as if there's a lion in the grass, but there's no lion, you know?
Man, that's deep. I've never heard of it that way. My gosh. Like, so our fears, a lot of times, were naturally designed to protect us, but we just have to look at each situation and figure out, you know, I guess, you know, what am I really protecting myself from, you know, versus, like, so, like, obviously, if you see a lion in the grass or a snake or something, you know, that could bite you, you know, I think that's a healthy fear to get you to move your behind, right? You know, versus, you know, pulling the trigger on a good property, you know. So I love it. Love how you share that. So William and I, we're investors too, and we always like to figure out where the opportunity is. And we both, you know, actually, you know, we have a lot in common, like, where we even both want to invest out of the country. I'm in the process of getting my first out of the country investment in the Dominican Republic. But tell us about the Canadian real estate market. Do you see a lot of opportunities there? I'm honestly, I've no clue about the Canadian market, and I'd love to learn more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the first thing for you, a U.S., investors with your powerful U.S. dollar to realize is that, any Canadians can now, any Canadians can now put their fingers in their ears. You get a 30% discount on everything that's for sale up here. So, the American dollar right now is quite high in relationship to the Canadian dollar. So for, your U.S. investor, I think you would be shocked by how cheap things are, even though for us Canadians, it's kind of expensive. Now, across the country, it's like if I were to ask you, how is investing in the U.S.? Well, you'd be like, well, are we talking New York? Or are we talking like Mississippi? Because they're not the same thing. And Canada has a similar phenomenon in that, we have our very big markets of Toronto and Vancouver that are quite overvalued. So it's difficult to buy properties there that make sense just because the values have been driven up so high by homeowners. Like Canada has like a serious lack of properties that are available for people to buy their own homes. So the prices of that have just been driven up like crazy. The submarket that I'm in Montreal, Quebec traditionally has been kind of a poorer part of Canada. Our tenancy laws are like super tenant friendly, but it means that our property values are relatively low. And if you have some kind of a path to optimization, you can make a lot of money quickly because, we have various, strategies to work around some of the rent control stuff. And there's just different opportunities here that I think for a U.S. investor. And like in terms of, our market cycles are also not 100% aligned. So Canada's actually had a worse inflation problem than the U.S. has. And it means that your interest rate's actually higher, but it's more of a problem for the Canadian consumer or buyer because of inflation and because most of our debt is mortgage debt. The American consumer has more consumer debt. The Canadian consumer has more mortgage debt. So it's actually right now, it's actually quite difficult for local people to acquire properties and to make moves because our interest rates are just sort of too high vis-a-vis what our property prices are. And so if you have some kind of, cash strategies or something like that, you could actually you can make really good deals on properties that maybe somebody local might not be able to do because they don't have access to good financing.
So how does that work if you're coming from the US and buying in Canada? Are there any legal laws, loopholes that you got to jump through to be able to do that?
So and actually it's a good thing you asked that question. So there was a much publicized thing that you're not allowed, there's no foreign investors allowed in Canada anymore. That's not true. There's a ban on foreign investors on three doors and less. So that would be your single family home, your duplex, your triplex. If you're buying in your personal name, foreign investors can no longer buy those kind of properties. But like if you read between the lines, it's actually really not very difficult to get around that because if you form an incorporation, like we don't have LLCs here, you would have to directly incorporate. But if you incorporate a Canadian company, which costs about $350, like Canadian, so for you guys, that's like, $225. you incorporate like a Canadian company and buy through the company. You're no longer an American investor. You're a Canadian corporation buying a residential property. Or the minute you go into like multifamily, those laws don't apply. And then usually for an American, I mean, you could own in your personal name, but probably you'd want to go through like an incorporation. And then you just have this Canadian entity that you can use to purchase properties up here.
So if you're going through the Canadian entity, does the 30% discount still count?
Yeah, of course. That's just exchange rate, right? Like one of our dollars is worth 70 cents or 72 cents, right? Okay. So
you automatically get deals at 70 cents in the dollar pretty much, right? That's awesome. Wow. Wow. This has been absolutely amazing, Terry. And it's so much to cover in such short time, but more than likely, maybe we missed something. Is there anything we missed so our audience can become a breakthrough investor just like you?
Oh yeah. Put me on the spot.
Of course.
So, I'm going to speak to maybe like one of my pet peeves in the real estate industry, which is the fact that us as, people who maybe take up airtime, right? Or, on social media, that there's this real tendency to just project the success story. And I think that, people who are starting out and who maybe are a bit intimidated by what it takes to get here is that behind all of these stories, people had challenges and we all took some serious lifestyle hits and made some serious sacrifices to get where we are. And maybe when you're at the, you know, higher up on the mountain, you don't talk about some of those experiences as much as we should. And, you know, I think people who are starting out should be aware that, like, anybody who you see on an Instagram feed who's, you know, private jets or the bling bling lifestyle or whatever it is, like, they did some pretty unsexy things in order to get where they were. And, you know, even though that doesn't show up on an Instagram reel, like, that's the reality of what it takes to be successful, not just in real estate, but in anything, right? Takes sleepless nights, takes lots of hours in the gym, lots of hours on the road, however you want to, lots of hours, like, you know, scouting on the MLS and like networking and cold calling. Like, you have to just put in a lot of hours on that stuff before you start to see a bit of a return. And like, the progress of that is, it's in years, can take 5 years, can take 10 years before you're really at the level at which you can be financially independent with the lifestyle that you want to have. And I think, at the risk of making things sound too easy, I think us as, you know, speakers, coaches, people who are kind of like in the mentorship role in real estate, I think we need to really map that out and be transparent about it, because otherwise we're doing people a disservice. If they think that I've been doing this for 6 months and, you know, I'm not like making six figures doing it, well, you know, you're not doing it wrong. You just haven't accounted for the time factor.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And we've been really blessed to have you on this show, and you have so much knowledge and wisdom. And I believe our listeners are going to want to hear you more. They're going to want to look for you. And so how can they find you and how can they connect with you?
Yeah. So, I mean, the social media, LinkedIn is my social media of choice. So Terry Schauer on LinkedIn. Otherwise, obviously go check out the book, Mindful Landlord. Some ideas in there that I'm super passionate about, that mindfulness stuff is like really mapped out kind of in more detail than what I gave on this podcast. And then you can obviously go check out my show, The Real Estate Investors Club Podcasts, on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Terry. It was absolutely amazing having you on the show. And we hope to meet you in person someday.
Yeah. RubeCon.
Yeah.
Do you come to the RubeCon?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. We have another RubeConner. Awesome. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys.